Welcome everyone here tonight to our special meeting, Thursday, December 19th, 2024 at 6 p.m. I'm going to try my best to make agenda items for AI and so that we can keep track of this, but should I forget, you remind me, okay? So we're going to start putting the roll call first on the agenda to help AI, and that way we list all our names, and so I figured that was a good thing. Planning Commission does it, so to me it's a good idea. So at that, let's have roll call real quick before we do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we'll know who's here. Josh, you want to start?
Yeah, Josh Ellis is present on Zoom.
Gladys LaFever, present.
John Brath, president.
And Ray Gardner, present.
And Judy Drain, mayor, present. All right. That agenda item number one, the Pledge of Allegiance. If everybody would stand, we will say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, item number two is approve the agenda, and we will exercise unanimous consent if there are no objections to the agenda as presented. So moved. All right. Item number three on the agenda, conflict of interest disclosure. Does anybody have anything they need to disclose with what's on the agenda? All right. Moving right along. All right. Number four, public comments, 3 minutes maximum per person. You may not give up your time to another person. So public comments is now open. All right. Sounds like we don't have anyone that would like to speak up. Item number five, discussion and action on our ordinances. We'll take the first one now. There was a suggestion that we put them up one by one and go through them. If that's okay with everyone, we'll do that. We've pretty well gone through that. Our other option is for someone to speak up on a particular item if they have read through and do not agree with. We've spent so much time on this that I think for the most part we should pretty well know up. But there were some changes on the subdivision ordinance, well, actually on all of them, but that one seemed to be the big one. However, most of it, as I was reading through, were minor things and things that they put in that took out something that was in another section so that things weren't repeated. If I am incorrect on that, John, let me know.
Yeah, I think zoning had quite a big, most...
Was it the big one?
Okay. Some changes, yeah.
All right. So how do you feel? Do you feel good with what we have? Do you have questions? Gladys, go ahead.
Yeah, I have one concern, and I'm not sure know the answer. You know, we talked about when people get their building permit, they have to have the irrigation company sign off on it. I don't know whether we kept that in there or not, but I definitely think we need to, because in light of the problems where we have had, what if somebody builds below one of the irrigation ditches, one of the, like, the canal, I think they need to be aware of that. Isn't that a floodplain?
That's still in there, Gladys. We did not remove that.
Make sure of that. Okay.
I saw that in there.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.
So does anybody else have anything on the subdivision on ordinance 2024-A, which will be 2024-3? Well, I suggest that we entertain a motion then, Sean.
Okay, so then I'll read the motion, but you've got it in writing. So,
well, hold on a second. Only because there was some wording around our fees in here that was a little goofy. John, we talked about, I don't know if you tweaked them. I didn't. That's why I'm bringing it up. So some of the fee language says, what was it? It didn't say, some of it says by resolution, and then the other ones say as adopted or something. There was some, you know what I'm talking about, John? Like, I tagged you in a few of these things on the ordinance. I guess I'd have to find an example.
I think we can kind of scroll through so people can see the highlight. All the recent changes are still highlighted, and we'll clean up those highlights after before we have the official version printed. But, you know, I was going to say, we're at the end of a long process that's been our major topic since we had the joint meeting with the Planning Commission back in July. And what we have here is not perfect, but no complicated document is ever going to be perfect. I think we really need to enact what we have tonight. I think it's a sincere best effort that's a major improvement over the old code language. And if and when problems, inconsistencies, omissions are discovered, we can run an ordinance to make up technical corrections. But I think tonight, we should just adopt them as is and have them in place for the start of the year.
I also see that it says under fees that amounts should be set by resolution. So it's very clear how they're set in here. Actually, I didn't realize that before. So I think that covers everything very clearly that I had concerns about.
We could talk about the fees and the infrastructure standards after this, but I think getting these ordinances in place is the thing we really need to do tonight. Other discussion?
I don't have anything. Okay. I'm just pulling that up. I'm in the same, I believe the same way that John does right now. We've tried tweaking everything to the best of our ability. We're bound to run into a few things here and there down the line, but I think for the most part, people have put a lot of work into this. And it's important to get these passed to not only meet the deadline, but I really feel in my heart, I don't know how the rest of you feel, I feel like a lot of work was put into it and that I feel really good about passing this tonight. So anybody else have any comment on it?
No, I'm glad we're coming to this point.
Yeah, me too. All right, anything else from you, Josh?
No, I mean, there's potentially some other fees that we could add, like around application extensions or an amendment application, but I'm so ready to be done with this. So, John, let's hear your motion.
Before I make the motion, I do want to specifically thank everyone on the Planning Commission for their efforts, and to thank you, Josh and Nancy, for being a couple extra sets of eyes who put tremendous amounts of detailed attention on us. So much appreciated. Okay, I move to rescind the current Chapter 152 in its entirety and to adopt as Ordinance 2024-3, the 1213 version of an ordinance regulating the subdivision of lands within the incorporated areas of Boulder Town, Garfield County, State of Utah.
Do I have a second?
Gladys will second.
All right, any more discussion? All right, it's been moved and seconded that to rescind the current Chapter 152 in its entirety and to adopt as Ordinance 2024-3, the 12-13-24 version of an ordinance regulating the subdivision of lands within the incorporated areas of Boulder Town, Garfield County, State of Utah. All in favor say aye. Those opposed say no.
Josh, aye.
Let me do it again. Yeah. Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. All right. Subdivision ordinance is approved. All right. Now, still under number five, discussion and action on ordinance 2024-4. I had to think about that a minute. All right, the zoning chapter.
Could you bring that one up, Jessica? So of that one, I think we have a couple of things you should look at.
Can you just share it with the room?
Okay. Since our last meeting, we simply repealed the lot size average because that was only used in one place, which was the table, and it was used in a way that was confusing, and we defined it more than adequately in the actual ordinance text. So that was a major change, is that deletion. Continuing down. Okay, and building lot, we're now synchronized between the subdivision ordinance and the zoning ordinance. We don't have two slightly different definitions there. Okay, and there. That line for average building lot size was confusing. And once we took out the definition, it was no longer needed. Then it's clarified that you've got a minimum lot size without averaging, which was already there, and then minimum building lot size with averaging. So then in the next paragraph here, okay. We had some really confounding wording. It said, the applicant may propose any combination of lot sizes that are larger than the applicable minimum lot size established by the table and results in an average lot size no smaller than that required by the table. And after reading that about five times, I said, I don't know what that means. So I reworded it as saying the applicant may propose any combination of lot sizes where all building lots are equal to or larger than the minimum lot size with averaging listed in table 153.118, and where the total number of building lots does not exceed the ultimate number calculated in 153.119C, which is the part we had below with the ultimate number of lot calculation. So now I think it's very clear what you're allowed to do. Echoing Josh, I think when somebody tries to use it, they're probably going to find we need some clarifications. We'll deal with it when somebody tries to use it. So that was the changes.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on this? If not, we'll make the motion.
And then we
can discuss it.
Yeah. So I move to adopt ordinance 2024-4, the 12-17-24. Would you verify that one? Just that should be the one that's up there.
Yeah.
Of an ordinance to change Boulder Town Zoning Code, Chapter 153, to align with recent changes in the Boulder Town Subdivision Code, Chapter 152, and Boulder Town Building Code, Chapter 151.
Do I have a second?
Gladys will second.
All right, discussion. Does anybody have any discussion on this one? All right, well, it's been moved and seconded. No discussion. It has been moved to adopt as ordinance 2024-4, the 12-17-24 version of an ordinance to change the Boulder Town Zoning Code, Chapter 153, to align with recent changes in the Boulder Town Subdivision Code, Chapter 152, and Boulder Town Building Code, Chapter 151. All in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say no.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. All right, zoning code passes. All right, we will move on to number five, discussion and action on C, ordinance 2024-5, building and construction regulations. Do you want to pull that up? John, do you have anything on that you want to go over?
I think Josh made the most recent changes.
Okay, Josh?
Sure, yeah. We can pull it up real quick. But basically, the only thing I really changed was removal of timelines, which was a 151.11 is now reserved. I moved reference to the timelines being basically the duty of the building inspector. We kind of talked about this in our last meeting. I left it in there as an open item because we wanted me to check with the county about the possibility of extending the building permit inspection frequency out. I spoke with the secretary over there and she said, well, you know, the county's already doubled it from what's in code and in Utah state law. And they're not really interested in extending it anymore, primarily because it is just a setting in their software now. And they don't want to run it on a per jurisdiction. I mean, they can't really run it on a per jurisdiction basis. So that means we're pretty much stuck with that timeline. It's great. The county has doubled it already. That's nice. So that means there's nothing special to put there. So I just got rid of that section. That's the only thing in here. And then also looks like John, you changed 151.12 to 151.20, but it's, seems like it should be .12, right?
Well, no, that's to avoid the problem we've run into in the zoning ordinance, where since everything was numbered consecutively, there's no room if you have to add a paragraph. And really that 120 is a completely different topic that just for historic reasons is in chapter 151. That's creating the building authority that issued the bonds for this, for the town hall.
Oh, okay. All right. So that there is a reason it's not consecutive. I just wanted to make sure that. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Else is
okay. Then any more discussion? All right. All in favor say aye. All those opposed say no.
Hang on, there hasn't even been a
What have I done?
There's just never even been a motion.
Oh,
you just had, I know, it's because you're doing so many in a row.
I've been trying to be a good girl.
Yeah. You asked Josh to kind of present.
That's right. Go ahead, Josh.
So, okay, I move to adopt as ordinance 2024-5, the 2024-12/12 version of an ordinance to repeal the Boulder Town Building Regulations Construction Code, Chapter 151, and to replace it with the attached chapter to align with recent changes in Boulder Town Subdivision Code, Chapter 152.
Do I have a second?
Gladys will second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All right. All those in favor? Oh, I need to repeat this. So it has been moved to adopt as ordinance 2024-5. The 12-12-2024 version of an ordinance to repeal the Boulder Town Building Regulations Construction Code, Chapter 151, and to replace it with the attached chapter to align with recent changes in the Boulder Town Subdivision Code, Chapter 152. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Yay!
Okay, thank you.
Let's cheer. Good job, everyone.
So Jessica, do you want to be the scribe who cleans up the docx and makes the PDF version? Or should Josh and I do that?
I don't feel strongly one way or the other. If you want me to, you can assign it to me. If not, you are welcome to.
You've got so much work. Okay, Josh, if you will clean up the subdivision and building permits, and I'll clean up the zoning and get those to Jessica as clean documents with all the changes accepted and all that, we'll be ready to go.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I will do that.
Thank you, guys. All right, number six. I believe this is you prior to recording affidavit, Josh.
Yeah, so we kind of created a new deliverable at the end of the subdivision process. So they've got 2 years to build everything out. And then at the end, they kind of, you know, basically it's like, well, how do we know when it's done? And do we just trust them when they come in and say, here, sign my plat, I'm ready to record, I did all this stuff. So what John and I conceived was basically similar to the owner affidavit that you fill out on your building permit. It's like, we'll just have an affidavit that says, yeah, do. Then that gives everyone legal recourse if something wasn't done. You know, they did sign off at some point and say, I did it. We don't need to review anything other than we just signed the plat as the last signers on the plat as part of this process before they record. So what we did is set it up so that the developer will sign the affidavit and then they'll provide a few pieces of documentation, including the final print of the plat for signature by the Alua and the mayor. And so really what we need Michael to draft up some kind of an affidavit that passes muster and is legally legit to accomplish this for us. That's really all this is. So all right. I think it's pretty easy. We just need to, you know, get everyone on board and say, yeah, let's have Michael do it.
So have we had problems in the past with this at the end of the process that anyone knows of?
There are some possible examples that I can think of where things were promised but never, you know, done, or documents never filed and so forth. But it's simply, again, we don't have the resources to send somebody out to inspect the subdivision to say everything was done. So we're just letting the owner self-certify that, yep, I did what I promised.
Okay. Right.
And as I say, I think the reason to have Michael wordsmith it is that would, as Josh said, would be our grounds to take action against the owner if it turned out he said, for example, I installed the hydrants and all he had done is put the hydrant in the ground without working
out
the
sign that line. He did. Yeah. Okay. How do you feel, Mike? I don't think it's a problem. Okay.
Okay.
I'm on board.
So I guess I can just go as a work request without any problem. Mm-hmm. So do we need a motion on that, Josh? Just do it.
Yeah. I mean, we can do it in form. We'll approve it as part of a resolution at some later point in time. I guess ideally it would be, well, we have to have someone go through the subdivision process and build infrastructure and need to sign. So I guess we actually have plenty of time before this form would ever be used. So time is not of the essence. We will review and approve the output from Michael as a separate resolution. So we probably don't need any motion. Just more that everyone's aware that it's happening. And I don't know, Jessica, do you feel comfortable engaging Michael about this?
Yeah, I might need you to give me a tiny bit more detail to pass on to him, but yes, ultimately I think I know the gist, but to make it a little more detailed, I'll follow.
Yeah, up. And it's where it's described in the final application section of the ordinance might be plenty. I just have him start there and it doesn't need to be real rigorous. It's more the idea than like, you know, a 30-page contract.
Josh, it might actually be more efficient if you're the one who makes the phone call to Michael. That way, Josh, if the questions come up, Jessica doesn't have to go back and forth. Are you willing to do that?
Yeah, I can call Michael about it.
Okay, done.
All right. Moving on to agenda item number 7, RSTR temporary ordinance discussion.
All right. Thank you. Jessica, why don't you bring that up, what we have. Okay, well, sorry. Yeah, sure. Right, second page. So Jessica, you were the one who brought, you and Josh were the ones who basically called this problem to our attention. Does the language, what, give me a second here. Yeah, press escape. Okay, this language was amended from what we saw the last time based on some of the input from the Planning Commission hearing and subsequent discussion. The substantive change was to put back in the report. So it's now a three-part requirement to get a renewal, that they had to have at some point in time received a CUP. They had to have had a previous business license. And the way I worded it is that they needed to provide documentation that they collected sales and transit route tax at any time during 23 or 24. That sort of got away from Daryl's objection that, well, maybe they haven't filed the 24 taxes yet. Well, if they did in 23, they're still good. So that's what we've got right now. Does that? And basically it says to the talk, we don't explicitly repeal anything or suspend anything. We're simply saying notwithstanding anything in the ordinance, and we included both the provisions in 153, the RSTR ordinance itself, as well as in section 110, which is the business licensing regulation. So we say, notwithstanding any provision there, the town clerk is authorized by the us as a legislative body to issue the business licenses. Does that meet your concerns and needs?
Yeah, I think so. As I read it, yes.
Okay.
And I think that was the bottom line.
Yeah, it is. It is
after all the discussion and stuff. I mean, really, it's a simple bottom line, and we get the that gives us the time to get the RSTR in.
No,
done.
There is one thing. What we did could be interpreted as a moratorium, which is debatable because having an RSTR isn't a use by right. But rather than argue about that, we could just make this a 6-month expiration, which still gets us past the renewal dates. And also, it would be good to have this resolved within 6 months so that people can start planning their businesses for 26. So I was going to say that we would change expiration to June 30th of 25.
I have a concern about C, collected sales and transient room tax for rentals, mainly because, like, Jessica, correct me if I'm wrong, but this isn't a normal part of the business license renewal process, right?
That the taxes you're talking about?
Correct.
Yeah, like analyzing tax receipts. That's not a normal part of the business license renewal process, correct?
Yeah, it is not.
And so my question was going to be, okay, so what? How are they going to prove what the, you know, I'm not against it, but
yeah.
And I can answer that, Gladys. The way they would prove it is they would get their annual conditional use permit renewal. The Planning Commission would review and approve this information, not the town administrator who's issuing business licenses. So I guess from my perspective, I feel like that should be there. That's fine for it to be part of the CUP process. I think it's really weird to add a new requirement to the business license process in our pursuit of trying to remove Jessica as a frictional element, I think it would just be easier to say, if you previously had a CUP and you had a business license last year, we'll give you one this year. That's fine. I don't care if you did sales taxes or not. We'll deal with that when we renew everyone in 2026, right? Like, it's fine. And then it doesn't add additional weird things that Jessica's never done before in her job as business license renewal. It seems like an odd thing to throw in there to me.
I agree. Where we haven't done it before.
Yeah, if everyone agrees, I'll strike that.
Yeah, that's
fine.
Okay. Okay, very good. Okay, what I'd like to do then is make a motion that we schedule this draft with the two changes tonight of striking item C and changing it to a 6-month sunset. We need to schedule that for public hearing, which we're required to have because this again is in chapter 153. So we'll have to have a public hearing and vote on it on January 2nd. Which means the public hearing notice needs to be out on Monday.
John, I don't understand why a public hearing is required. This is literally entirely confined to the business license requirement that you have to be in compliance with Boulder Town ordinances to get a business license.
I totally agree with you, but when I ran that question explicitly by Michael Wynn, he says, well, the way he reads chapter 153, any change to 153 requires here under the town ordinances requires public hearing at both planning commission and town stage.
Kate said the same.
Yeah, under state law,
yeah.
We do not have to have the town council hearing, but under Boulder ordinance currently we do. Something else to fix in the future. Does that answer your question, Josh?
I'll talk to you about it later, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So the motion will be to schedule this draft ordinance, which will be 2025A right now as a placeholder for public hearing and action on January 2nd.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Gladys will second.
Any further discussion? All right, I didn't get that all down, John.
Okay, so the motion is to schedule draft ordinance 2025A, an ordinance to make temporary changes to the residential short-term rental business license renewal process for public hearing and vote on January 2nd.
All right, all in favor say aye, those opposed say no.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Thank you, John. That was a lot in there. I thought I was going to get it all down, but I just... All right. That's a good deal. Agenda item number 8, fee schedule, land use fees. All right. Go ahead.
So yeah, I had Aaron, this is last minute. So sorry, Aaron got the changes in. Thanks so much, Aaron, for doing that and putting another set of eyes on it. Jessica, in our meeting folder, I copied over the fees folder from our August meeting. And in that folder, there's a link to ZA review of fees spreadsheet. And that has all of Aaron's updates on it.
Okay, just a second.
Okay, and it looks like when I sent her the email, I made a list off the top of my head, and then it looks like I was wrong. So I think she's highlighted some ones that, so she put the code references in there for us so that we have, we know that they exist, basically. We know that they actually exist in code, are empowered by the code. That's the code section that mentions the fee explicitly. And so this, I guess, is the list of it. So I think the orange ones, we should probably just delete. We just passed the ordinance without them, and we're not going to go revise it. So extensions are free. Boundary agreement review. Yeah, there you go. Boundary line, yes. And then, so the subdivision amendment application down there, I guess where... So we have a fee. So this is in the subdivision ordinance under fees. We mentioned fees for these things, but maybe Aaron, can you comment on this? You're the one that put it together. Sorry.
No problem. Yeah. So you're right. The orange things are just the ones that are like not really. I think the boundary agreement, you probably meant boundary line agreement. So we can take that one out. Line 6. That's not real. And then the 2 down below line 16 and 17, they are indicated in the section called fees. And I put the language all the way over in the notes. But there's no other reference that I can find for them. You know, a process for amending a subdivision, for example. So we might need to do a little bit more work on those.
Okay, so yeah, I guess we probably should have looked at the or done this first and then passed the ordinance, but that's okay. Basically, if we don't have a fee in our schedule for it, we obviously can't charge for that. So, and I don't even know. Yeah, we don't have a subdivision amendment process in our ordinance, right?
I reviewed the document that was looked at earlier in the call or the meeting. And so that's the one I was referencing, and I did not see that.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to, yeah. We'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it, I suppose. So maybe what should we do? These are mentioned just casually under the list of fees, though, it looks like. So they're not necessarily empowered by the actual ordinance language in terms of what that even is. So I guess I would say we should probably just delete the orange rows. Does that make sense to everybody?
Okay.
You know, as a kind of a clarification, and maybe this is a wording thing that we missed. Boundary line adjustments are pretty straightforward. In fact, basically the only thing the town does is if it has a building on it, we check the setbacks. That's a few minutes work.
Well, hold on. A boundary adjustment, if it has a dwelling on it, requires a boundary line agreement that then requires us to review it. That's how we set the ordinance up. So if you're just doing a boundary line adjustment and there's no building on it, there's nothing we do at all.
That's right. So I'm not concerned about that fee. If you're doing a subdivision amendment on the scale of what Meadowmark was, that basically is a new subdivision application. We give it a new subdivision name and so forth. So that really falls, so those types of things fall under really a subdivision application. And I think my concern for tonight is, or certainly by January 2nd, is simply to enact some specific fee for putting in an application for a subdivision and an hourly billing rate as part of that resolution, so that we can start charging fees if somebody puts an application in. Otherwise, the taxpayer is picking up the cost. So that's why I'd really like to get that done. The big one is the subdivision applications.
So, I mean, our prior fee schedule items numbers 1, 2, and 3 at the top of this, I mean, those would just transfer to, I mean, basically we just need to update the code references there, but they would transfer. They're the same wording and everything from the ordinance. So we don't actually have to do anything with those other than, I mean, we have fees for those items, same language, they will just transfer. You know what I mean?
Could you go up, the top? Up there, Jessica, so we can see that.
Okay. Yeah, so we have concept, prelim, and final subdivision applications are all in here already. So that will just, like, we don't even, they're in here, right? So we don't have to do anything to those if we don't want to.
Could we have a resolution written up and ready for a vote on January 2nd?
Yeah, we can just table this. I mainly wanted to get the ball rolling on us having the list of what all the fees we mentioned are and just wrap our head around it. So that's fine. I can come up with, you know, some numbers. I can do that. So we can table this until the next meeting. It's fine.
Before we table, I think, you know, why don't we discuss the numbers? Because
sure.
That's the two questions we had when I looked back at the notes I had from, I think it was August, was do we charge basically a $25 an hour rate, which is basically Aaron's pay plus a little bit of benefits plus office overhead? Or do we charge a substantially higher rate, which we could probably justify, but that's one decision we should make, $25 or something higher for an hourly rate.
Is this on the subdivisions?
Yeah.
Or in general?
Eventually, we should probably have the same rate for everything she does. And this is our attempt to recover the cost for the people who are creating work for the top.
Mm-hmm. And also who they're consulting with, though. I think that's why we picked 70 was because, yeah, that might be a lot for Aaron, but that's not going to go very far with the attorney or with an engineer. Necessarily.
That's true.
And yeah,
just having Aaron is one cost, but it's not very frequently that it's just her.
Yeah.
Especially if this is an hourly rate, which is like billed after a normal meeting. And so what does that look like, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what the other justification for charging a higher rate. That then her overhead time, maintaining the office, preparing for the meetings and all that, isn't directly billed. We're covering that in a higher billing rate. For the consultants, we could just say their actual billing rate, whatever it is, just passes through. We don't mark it up, but we don't.
Yeah, we could do that.
That would cover Wynn and Caden and any engineer we hire.
And John, I'm just curious if anybody knows how these numbers compare to the county in terms of their fee schedule or something similar.
Garfield County, I think, charges $400 for a subdivision application.
Even a one lot. Okay, my thought was just because part of Boulder is in the county, and if we were able to make that fairly consistent in and out of the county, then that would be consistent throughout. Not my fault.
Well, $400 and then hourly rate gives an incentive for the applicant to get their application right so that the review goes quickly. Where I think we've historically run up large costs is when it's been a poorly prepared application, and then it takes many meetings to straighten things out. In contrast, like Ray Nelson's, which was very well prepared, went through basically in one meeting. Mm-hmm. So I would be happy saying that we go with $400 at $70 an hour.
I think that's better in range myself also.
Do we have a comment?
Sure. Just, up on?
I thought we had a comment.
We do. I just thought you would take them because okay. We haven't in the past. If they want to raise their hand and make a comment, they're more than welcome to.
Oh, yeah. Well, how do you feel about the 400 then, plus 70 an hour? Gladys, you have any input?
Not really. 400 plus hour. It's a lot of it just depends. You know, if we have to consult with somebody and they charge more than.
But maybe we could put that stipulation in there.
Yeah.
Is if a consultant does use, then those are the fees we use.
Well, I'm fine with that, yeah.
How about you, Josh?
Sorry, I was taking notes. So that, 400 plus 70 bucks an hour plus actual cost of consultants.
Yeah.
Do you see he wrote it under line 9?
Do that for prelim and final, conceptual plan review. We could just bill that hourly. Aaron, what are your thoughts on the conceptual plan re-review? The first one's free, re-review of a conceptual plan.
There, you know, it's probably a few hours of work each time one of those comes in, right? Because there's review time, and then there's usually about an hour meeting with the person who submitted it. Maybe it, you know, it's probably more along the lines of the $50 time frame, like for that.
Or what if we just build it by actual hours, like just hourly, no fixed rate?
That would be fine.
Anyone else have a comment on that one? I'm good with that. It's especially being a conceptual plan review. So.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, do you want to take the lead on putting this together as a resolution that we could vote on in January 2nd?
Yes, I can do that. And I think, the appeal issue is fairly well set out in state law. Like it's got, we have to split the cost of the consultants. And so I'll propose something and I'll just fill in the blank there based on the conversation we just had.
And I did discuss with Jessica right now, since we can't take electronic payments, we'll just be having to ask for a money order or a paper check.
Mm-hmm.
But that, as we've written in the ordinance, have pay the fees as a condition for final approval. So they don't pay, they don't get their approval.
Yeah, that was a change that we added to the affidavit prior to recording stage. We added wording that says, plus any fees at basically every stage, at the end of every stage, so that we had, because, you know, if we involve consultants in the final application, for example, they pay a fee up front, that $70 an hour plus actual cost of consultants, we won't be able to recover that for potentially years until they go to record. And so at that point, we say, we're not going to sign your plat until you finish paying our fees.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a good placeholder that puts us in a better shape for moving forward next year. So I support that.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, I'll come back at the next meeting with something fully developed. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Josh. All right. We are at agenda item number 9, infrastructure standards. John?
Okay, let's see. Do you want to bring that document up in case we need it? Right now, I'm still waiting for Josh and Pete Benson to come back with the section on fire protection plan. And we could, the standards really don't become operative until somebody gets the point of asking the, of filing an application saying exactly what do I have to build. So we could certainly wait till January 2nd to do that. But what I wanted to do tonight, but I'm trying to remember, have we ever in the town council looked at the standards document? The planning commission, we've done it many times, but I don't think we've ever looked at it here.
I don't think we have.
Okay, what you
we've discussed a few things.
Yeah, I don't actually know if I have it, John.
I stuck it in the pending for the meeting items for tonight.
Yeah.
Should say infrastructure standards active something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you just a second to double check? Yeah, in tonight's meeting, which is December 19th. Here, I'll throw this over so you can see it's in session notes. This is tonight's meeting. So it's the subdivision RSTRs.
Ooh.
And when I've gone into each one.
There it is.
Which one?
No,
it's in the parent folder. Boulder Infrastructure Design Standards Draft.
Where?
In the 1219 meeting folder.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
What the heck? I swear it wasn't there.
Okay, good. All right. So first I wanted to just clarify, because there's been some real misunderstandings about the purpose and the intent of these standards. The first thing is really that the standards are guidelines, and anything really mandatory or required has to be based on something in the ordinance. You can't be telling someone, you've got to meet the standard if there isn't some language in the ordinance that supports it. And I did cross-check as the standards were written, what we have in is consistent with the ordinance. But my intention when I started writing them was to provide the guidance for a do-it-yourself developer or a local landowner who's trying to do a subdivision for the first time. And they don't have a full team of lawyers and landscape architects and engineers to help them. So it was to give some guidance so that when the zoning administrator and a applicant is sitting down and the applicant says, well, what's an all-weather road? Or how wide does my road have to be? And what does my intersection with Lower Boulder Road have to look like? We've got some guidance. The way I wrote them in all cases was that these are guidance. If you have a professional engineer design something and certify that it meets good practice, then you put the burden on the engineer. I'm not doing the engineering for a big subdivision. And that's the other thing, is that really what we have here is a minimum approvable design for roads and driveways and hopefully for fire protection for lands, which might include fire breaks and hydrants, for a one lot or very small subdivision. But they really aren't adequate if somebody were trying to do another Boulder King Estates scale subdivision, where we definitely would want something as better in terms of roads and underground utilities and so forth. So why don't you scroll down through just so people can see what this sort of looks like. Okay, so table of contents, you keep going. So anyway, from that original intent, I think it morphed to have a lot more into it than I'd originally expected, but I'm certainly open to, if it helps people to get subdivisions, good. So that's the resolution, which would be at some point adopted by us. Keep going. So mostly what this is basically saying is what I just said. They're a basic design that could be used as guidance by citizens for undertaking do-it-yourself creation of a small number of lots. Alternative designs certified by a professional engineer will be considered provable. Okay, keep on going.
Can I ask a question, sure. John? So, I mean, I've liked the idea of this all the way along, but what will... Is there a verbiage in there, and I don't recall it if it was, that differentiates from a bigger subdivision? So many, like a smaller subdivision, what difference, you know, what makes the difference between the two?
Well, that's where we've never really had a good consensus within the Planning Commission about where we draw the break. Right now, in the way the ordinance is written, we're making the exceptions for one new law. Historically, we had that language in our ordinance that said the town had considerable discretion on driveways for four or fewer lots, And since we really didn't require anything other than a driveway, water, and septic, we in effect had a four lot exemption. It's very small. Somewhere between two and four or six lots is probably where we start talking large subdivisions. I think the biggest we've had has probably been about six, which was the Kennedy subdivision. Six at one time. But yeah, we have that's why I say we really have not discussed what the standards would look like for a large subdivision, whether large is four or 10 lots.
And that's what I was thinking, maybe something above four, anything above four, you know.
Yeah.
That's the idea behind it is good because, you know, Joe Blow comes in and wants to do a few things. And we want to make things easier for people to be able to look at and understand what they have to do. So I've always liked the idea since you brought this up on. But we do definitely have to discern or make the.
Now this one I had put in 20 lots, but again, we never received, we reached consensus whether that, not what that number is. Okay, some definitions. The main one there that you have to be careful about is that in our ordinances, we refer to the package of American Legal Ordinances as the code, town code. But then here we're talking about the building codes. So I had to clear that up, that definition up. Keep going. Okay, subdivision improvement plans. So this was sort of a summary based on the ordinance of what required infrastructure is there, and then what documentation should be provided. And what I think is going to happen with these standards, no matter what, it's been hard to get people to pay attention to them. So I think what we'll end up doing is adopting them, and the first time somebody uses them, we're going to get some feedback, and we'll say, okay, it's only by resolution we'll fix it. But the intent of this was more or less a checklist of, okay, this is what you need to do for potable water, for road maintenance agreement, stormwater drainage, and so forth. Keep going. Okay, if I had roads and driveways, now we're getting there. So the requirements for recorded access basically is paraphrasing what's in the ordinance, because this one's very important for as being enforceable. Talk about a little bit about flag lots, requirements for new easements. This is a big debate. Here's a debatable question. We've jumped through hoops with private road maintenance agreements. And one reason I can't find good samples is nobody else uses them. The towns that do allow private streets generally are very explicit that if you have a subdivision that has private streets, you need to create a legal homeowners association that's registered with the state and meets all the, there's a whole section of state code about homeowners associations. And that's what most jurisdictions say. If you're going to have private streets, you've got to have an HOA. Now you've got a legal body that the town can deal with. When I looked at the maintenance agreement for Black Boulder Mesa, the whole roads thing is one paragraph that basically says the board can do whatever they want. where the rubber meets the road, where only is the other 100 pages in the CC&Rs about voting and how you amend these things, because these run with the land. They're 100 years from now, somebody may want to amend that agreement. The handshake, you know, so most of the thing in the your HOA incorporation documents deals with things like voting rights, transfer rights, amending amendment procedures. That's a big deal if we're going to require HOAs. When I talked with Nancy, she said, we don't want them. Well, then, you know, if we don't want them, then maybe we have to consider something different.
Yeah, well, I'm betting that we get a big pushback.
On the other hand, you know, Boulder King Estates has public streets. And when I was talking with Josh made the remark, what a nightmare it would be if we didn't have public streets up in Boulder King Estates and didn't have an HOA. And somehow you had to get everybody up there to agree.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping maybe at some point we could revisit this question of whether we should be making these things public streets in larger subdivisions, but then address Gladys's concern about how are we going to pay for it. You know, and there are some definite mechanisms that we could look at for that.
Yeah.
But
I just was at the mayor's meeting. I had the mayor's meeting, and it's a big deal right now. It's a big push for the legislation to come up with infrastructure ideas to improve roads and be able to help towns with their infrastructure and ways to generate money for infrastructure. And but right now it's a big deal, so.
Did you have a comment, Les?
No.
Oh, okay. So probably here's where the standards actually started, because it's always this question of what's an all-weather road, and which is the term in the Wildland Urban Code. And it's really not defined because it, of course, depends on the terrain and all that. This is sort of, if you went to Sam Stout and said, build me a good driveway, this is about what he'd build you. It's naturally not a road to be handling 100 cars a day, but it's, you know, for one, two lots, it's a suitable road. So that was probably where the standards actually started, and then we kind of went from there. And maybe this is the only one we really have to adopt in January, that and whatever the Pete comes up with on fire protection.
Yeah.
Okay, this really is part of the fire protection. This is the drawing that Pete's been giving people for years about how your turnaround at the end of a dead end has to be configured. That comes out of the code. Keep going to the next drawing. Okay, so then this is the this is hybridized from a lot of different jurisdictions, trying to keep a narrow country lane appearance, but still maintaining reasonable safety requirements as far as the intersection of a road, sight line and turning radius for the fire truck. Okay, and I think that this one, like I say, will get replaced by whatever Josh and Pete come up with, fire protection plan. And I was reading an interesting article today talking about some hillside developments up in the scrub brush in New Mexico and people not being able to get fire insurance. I think that's something we are going to have to face, that, you know, we mandate, well, certainly we can start enforcing the provisions of the Wildland Urban Code much better, and the county nominally enforces it, so they know how to do it. Because a lot of it's tied to fire-resistant construction of the building, as well as fire breaks around it. You know, but do we want, as a town, to talk about if you have a bigger subdivision, that you have to maintain a fire break around the subdivision? You need to keep the brush off your road so that they serve as fire breaks. I think at some point we will have to have those discussions.
Yeah.
Okay, the water and the septic is basically describing our current practice, and this has not been updated. The potable water has not been updated based on the conversations we had with Boulder Farmstead. That's pretty clear. The only way you can guarantee a water right from Boulder Farmstead is to pay for the water share. Well, that'll have to be updated. Okay, keep going. And I think that's the major things in there. We do, the one that I didn't get very far on is this question here where we are now about irrigation. I had some good discussion with Katie Coleman about these issues, but you brought some more information here. You know, I think, you know, whether we do, it may be wise to say that when somebody subdivides, they have to delineate a maintenance easement along the canals so that equipment can get in there. Certainly the irrigation company was there long before anybody else, so they would have the historic easement by use, but to require it to be clarified as far as maintaining maintenance access to the canals, and also acknowledgement, like Gladys said, you know, if people want to build below an irrigation ditch, they need to acknowledge that they're subject to flooding.
Yeah, and I think that irrigation companies have a 16-foot right of way.
Mm-hmm.
At least I know that's a long time ago. We had that problem where the water comes down through. And they said we have a 16-foot right of way. But maybe letting that be known.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing. The standards are a good place to put that kind of information down. So the applicant and the ZA are both aware of it. Stormwater drainage, what I basically did is I started from what under state law and federal EPA, where you have to have a runoff plan for construction, which is when you disturb more than 1 acre. And a quick back of the envelope calculation said for anything less than 4 lots, the roads and the building paths are not going to add up to an acre of disturbed land. So the way this was written is to say that you're exempt from the stormwater drainage plan if you're disturbing less than an acre. Again, try to make it easy for a small operator, but we probably want to, you know, we do have a problem with the Boulder King Estates where that south road has that dip that does flood when it rains hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a real concern for bigger ones. And Caden brought up the same thing, you know, that subdivision and tropic that get floods. Floodplains and wetlands. I've never heard anything back from, you know, I did contact the people from the state about the flood mapping. I've never heard more. So when we map, we will do that.
And John, that was one of my requirements for my CUP, and I couldn't find any data. I couldn't find any data for the Boulder area, whether you were or were not in a floodplain. And so the presumption was there's no data. So, there's no data.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The FEMA has never done the we're on the list, their work list for some time in the next couple of years, but we've never had the official floodplain mapping.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's about it. So you've got this. What I tried to do was document current practice, not really change things, but just get it down so people have a mutual understanding between the subdivision reviewer, the ALUA, and the applicant, what they might be expected to do.
Well,
I
think it's a good idea.
Can I comment real quick?
Yes.
So in talking with John about this, it is a bit goofy. So basically what John's done is he approached this from the perspective of, okay, well, we don't want to just adopt this insane list of engineering standards that, you know, any random person trying to peel off one lot needs to build these huge driveways or whatever. But then we exempted that condition from these standards. So John approached this trying to achieve a goal of making it easy for them. And then we actually did it through ordinance and exemption entirely from the standard on at least one lot subdivision. So now we're in a weird situation where John has written, I mean, obviously done an insane amount of work, which thank you for digging into this because wow, you've done an insane amount of work to create a simple situation that doesn't protect us from the thing we all fear, which is the larger situation. So I guess this is maybe a question for John, like what if we said that this plan is valid up to whatever 4 lots and then anything above that, we go to any other town and just some urban town and just copy and paste their requirements. And basically you could just get one that required asphalt roads and that would pretty much shut down any subdivision over 4 lots functionally, right? Because you're never going to get asphalt in Boulder economically. And then that would functionally limit the size of a subdivision.
I've toyed with exactly those sorts of ideas, Josh. But as a practical matter, I really want to see some action by the Planning Commission on housing opportunities. But yes, at some point we do need to revisit how we would regulate larger subdivisions. And that could be a strategy that we We explicitly discourage the kind of subdivision we don't want by imposing requirements that are going to boost their cost.
All right, well, we have some future planning, and it's a good start.
So perhaps in January, we may have adopt some subset of the standards.
Okay.
Just well, to have it as a placeholder. And then what's nice is a resolution we can revise for any time very easily.
Okay, good.
Cool. Okay, I have another question for you, John. So if we said that this was suitable up to like four lots, what would happen if someone came in with a 10 lot subdivision? Then, you know, we have a standard, it's suitable. Then it would just be national, you know, the engineers would decide basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could, you know, as a placeholder, I would just simply write something that anything larger than four lots requires a design by a professional engineer. And trust that, you know, the engineers aren't going to put their signature on drawings that call for bad things.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense to me. And we just have to be careful that whatever we establish as requirements inputs to their design appropriately.
Yeah, but I think, you know, to require the roads to be designed by a professional engineer would already force a much, much higher standard road.
All right, anything else? Good job, John.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Agenda item number 10, budget finals, financials review for ARPA funds. Jessica.
Let me just bring this up. Okay. So last month we had the discussion that we needed to allocate the ARPA money that we were given in 2021 had to be used by the end of this year. If we did not use it by the end of this year, we had to give it back to the federal government. And so making sure that we actually use that money to put it, to actually like spend it right now and then show it in the budget. And so I sent it to everyone. What had been talked about, sorry, that you guys all voted on in the last meeting was to put it in wages, salaries, wages, things like that, just to kind of, we knew that was kind of a big expense. It qualified for what we were allowed to use the ARPA funds for. And so I went ahead and did that. So I sent you all, there's the two parts. So it's like where you can actually see it in the budget. And then to be able to see the breakdown of it, you can see it here. And it's just saying exactly, what I put into there for the ARPA funds. The only thing was that we had a funny, so when I would allocate it for a, like our wages, like my wages, then there's an automatic amount. Like it was hard for me to just see the breakdown very quickly of what the dollar amount was that would be covered, including the what the town pays for in taxes. And so I got as close as I could without like spending too much time on it. And then with that, there was what $29.63 left over that I did not allocate into the wages. And so then you'll see that one. I just allocated it to something really easy. It's an Esplanade Home Center. The fire department just bought like a chain socket and replacement chain. And so I just allocated that money. So it used up the whole, the amount was $17,593. And so between the wages and that bill for the fire department, that money has been allocated. So there's a couple things on the budget that I
just kind of want to bring forward. Sorry, let me make sure that I share this just so that everyone else can see. Okay, so you'll actually see here, so these are the ARPA expenses. And as we go over, you'll actually see in the actual, there is the 17,593. And so that is in the actual, that is the total amount that has been spent. And then the breakdown that I gave you guys is if you like click on that, it'll show you exactly what's in that fee or in that expense. And so that is it actually being spent. And then on the revenue side, so it's not in the ARPA revenue. The ARPA revenue was, we did not get this money this year. And so we got it back in 2020 or 2021. There was money given to both. And so you'll see it is not in the budget under ARPA revenue. Where we have that amount is this very last item in the expenses. So the fund balance appropriated from prior years. And our original budget, we talked about 3,000, but we allocated the whole ARPA fund. So the $20,328 is in that revised. The revised is what we actually adopted. And so you'll see that it is separate from the capital projects. So you'll see the capital projects is the 13,000. In the budget right now, it does not show in the actual, but that's because we're gonna have to wait for Lacey to come through and reconcile it. And then you'll be able to see that fund there. So just so you can kind of see where it did come in and then where it will be taken out of that side. So if anyone has questions about that, I tried to make it pretty cut and dry and simple so that it wasn't too complicated.
Thank you for an excellent job, Jessica. I guess what's going through my mind, I have not looked recently at what triggers when we need to have a budget, I mean, reopen the budget and have a budget hearing. Does this trigger needing to have a budget hearing?
No, because we have the funds.
Okay.
So the funds have already been allocated into the fund appropriated for the prior years.
Okay.
So because that's in there and you have the ability to spend that, that's what, so it just needs to be put in there correctly. But yeah, so we don't have to, we just need to move the line item from where it's spent. Yep.
I thought that if we went over a line item, on the expense side, go down to where it came out as it ARPA expenses. So, oh, it's because it's in this big category. We're not over on the whole category. So then we don't need a hearing, right? We can screw with line items. But if we go over on that whole category and expenses or whatever, then we have to have a hearing. Isn't that right? Okay. I'm still learning all the budget stuff is hard to remember.
It is hard, especially when we don't go over it all the time. Like, it's not a normal thing that we're just going over all the time.
So the thing we need to remember is that now our admin salaries and wages, which is hidden here on the bottom, very bottom of the top page one, at the very top of the screen there, is now, you know, artificially low because we took, you know, we moved it to a different line item in this category. So when we budget for next year, we need to remember that the prior year is artificially low by nearly $20,000, right? That's an important thing.
And the same thing with sanitation. Cindy's wages do go into that. And some of them more pulled. It's not a huge amount, but those two are where they go into. So just as we create the budget for the next fiscal year, just remember that those wages did come out. So those aren't true. That's what Josh is saying. So it'll go in both of those spots.
So I would like to, I'll just phrase it as a motion real quick and we'll see how it flies. Because we did just dump 17 grand into our budget for employee wages, notwithstanding the fact that we're about 40 grand short this year on our budget, at least not including the, I think it was 50 grand we put in to balance it from capital projects to start with. So we're way, 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 it's not a good year to do this, but I make a motion that we give every employee a $200 Christmas bonus this year.
Do I have a second?
You can second it even if you don't agree with it, so you can discuss it.
Yeah, you can. You don't have to. Because when we vote,
unless
we don't
like,
have
don't
to.
Even want to have a discussion, and you don't have to.
That's what's needed for discussion.
I'll second that right here.
Okay, open for discussion. Gladys, I can see.
Okay, I'm going to check for. Okay, so what are we going to give to the planning commission for all the work they've done? What are we going to give to the fire department for the work they've done? And it just goes on and on. I also don't like the idea we're setting a precedent for future years, so I object.
John, here, as much as I'd love to thank the staff that way, given that we didn't discuss it in the context of the budget and plan this in advance, I don't think this is a good thing to do on the last minute.
Josh Ray here, just wondering, any particular reason for the 200? I've been with Barford County about 25 years, and that's pretty much twice what I've ever seen. And so just wondering where that number came from.
Just made it up as something that's, not so low as to be trifling. No, not specifically based on any rationale whatsoever. Open to amendment.
Well, I was kind of shocked it came down to the last minute myself with the, I don't have a problem with a small bonus, but I think 200 is way inflated, so.
Move to amend.
Well, I don't see an amendment. All in favor say aye, all opposed say no.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, no.
John, no.
I would entertain, Ray, I would entertain an amendment. So, I think there can be value in bonuses in terms of employee morale and performance. We just haven't had a chance to really have any discussion at this point.
Okay, I'll pull my motion if I can't. I don't know if I actually can do that. I'll move to amend it to $75 Christmas bonus.
I was thinking more like $50.
All right, I'll move to amend it to $50, Judy.
This might come as a surprise to many, but I would second that.
All right. So we have the motion, the amended. We had the motion for 200 and then amended a motion. Well, did you pull it back? Because you could.
Just amended it.
Okay. All right. So the amendment is to give the employees a $50 bonus. Christmas bonus. Do I have a second on? Oh, Ray seconded?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, Ray. All right. Any more discussion?
Gladys is still going to object because my feeling is, okay, look how hard the planning commission worked. What are we giving to them? The fire people, what are they getting? Because they're all volunteers. Fortunately, we don't have any EMTs.
Yeah, we all sign up to volunteer, though.
All right, so we have the amendment, and we have the second. We had discussion. Anybody else? Let's vote on the amendment. All in favor of a Christmas bonus of $50, say aye.
Josh, aye.
Let us know.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Motion, the amendment carries.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
You don't expect a Christmas card.
But like for real, because I'm leaving tomorrow, so this is already a pretty fast turnaround.
All right. I don't think we have anything else. So, and we're still working on January. We pretty well know what January is going to be, so we're trying to keep it small. We do have a few things. Do you want to mention what we have for January?
Or? Yeah, we have training, right?
Yep, mainly so training. To sit
through, yeah. The training, and I will send out links to everyone because it's just annual trainings that everyone needs to re-up on. We need to re-sign conflict of disclosure forms. And then in the actual meeting, we have the subdivision application, the fee schedule, some form of the infrastructure standards. It might not be the entire thing that was shown tonight, but some of the part.
Did you get the RSDR ordinance?
Yes. But I'm just writing. Okay, so then we'll have the hearing and
vote
on the RSTR. I don't know what else off the top of my mind right now.
On the RSTR, I'm going to post some a list of concerns about the current ordinance on the website, on our meeting items website. I know Josh does live edits. If anyone else wants to do live edits, they're really welcome to. If they want to just give you feedback on that list, well, do the editing. So I'd like to have some thought by us about what we're sending to the Planning Commission. What are our goals and concerns, basically?
All right. I think that's important too. That way they'll have some guidance and know our concerns.
Okay.
So, all right.
Oh, maybe the only, sorry, we'll discuss this, but also the Planning Commission work priorities.
I think that probably can move to February beyond. No, leave it there. Leave work priorities in January. We'll probably finish it in February.
Okay. And then our yearly schedule, which would be nice to make sure that we see when the 4th of July falls, and this year to put it in place, if everyone is still okay with that, we've had meetings start at 6 o'clock, the same as the Planning Commission. We could do that as well. So just as we get the schedule ready, and there's a couple other things, but we'll send out the agenda. And so then just to remind everyone, Thursday, January 2nd, so the day after the new year.
Yeah, I thought about that. Hopefully daylight savings is going to disappear. It is a big deal for the new administration.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Made my day. I am still trying to recover from daylight savings.
Yeah, just put it on one time.
Yeah, I don't care what it is. I'm like you, I don't care. All right, everybody, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Nancy, make sure you thank the Planning Commission if you're still there. Awesome job.
Okay. Just the whole fucking